Hello, this is Dinora DeMarco, ISSB Technical Fellow. Welcome to the first episode of the ISSB Implementation Insights Podcast. This podcast series will cover transition implementation group meetings, including questions from preparers and those using the ISSB standards, and discussions about implementation of the standards. Today, we'll be talking about the March meeting of the Transition Implementation Group on IFRS S1 and IFRS S2, which I'll refer to as the TIG. I'm here with ISSB Vice Chair Sue Lloyd and ISSB member Veronica Poncheva, Chair and Vice Chair of the TIG, respectively. Sue, can you tell us a little bit about the TIG?
So the TIG is a public forum for the discussion of implementation questions about the standards that those using our standards have raised with us. So the group was set up to help people in the market who are using the standards to understand how to use them well and as a source of education. So the meetings are a chance to discuss what companies need to think about when applying the requirements in our standards. One important thing to note is that the TIG doesn't provide formal answers that are required to be complied with by our stakeholders. Rather, we minute the discussions, and those minutes are intended to provide additional extra information for those using the standards to support high quality, consistent application of the standards. The staff is also going to report back to the board, the ISSB, on what was discussed at the TIG meetings. So we'll also have the opportunity for the ISSB to determine if any extra help is needed, and if so, what that help should be, and whether we need to take any more action in order to help address the implementation questions that have been raised. So maybe, Veronica, could you tell us a bit about who the members are?
Yes, absolutely. And happy to be with you, Sue and Dinora. The TIG is made up of 17 members, of which 13 are preparers and 4 are assurance providers. There are also 3 official observers from the regulatory and standard setting community. It's important to mention that we have members from every continent and with geographic background as well as diverse industry experience, which means that they bring important perspectives to our discussion, which are really great to hear. By design, we have really sought to identify people who are involved in the detailed application of our standards so they can bring real-world practical experience to the discussions for the benefit of the ISSB and our stakeholders. We heard their thoughts in our first discussion meeting in March, a great opportunity to understand the different views, states of readiness, and hear about awareness levels.
Thanks, Sue and Veronica. Now let's talk about the March meeting. This was an important TIG meeting because it was our first meeting where we discussed questions from stakeholders. The first question is covered in Agenda Paper 1. So this paper focused on how to use ISSB standards and related materials to answer a question in IFRS S2. Sue, before we get into the technical details of the paper, can you give us some background about why we brought this question to the TIG? Besides the fact, of course, that it met the criteria for a TIG discussion?
Sure. So the ISSB receives implementation questions whenever we're out talking to our stakeholders doing outreach. And it's pretty clear that some of these questions are really specific about how to apply particular requirements in the standards. And often we get asked about the exact meaning of individual words that aren't actually defined in the standards. And it's really important to note that IFRS S1 and the climate standard S2 are sort of intentionally drafted for application by a wide range of companies with a different range of activities and circumstances. So we want these standards to really support the provision of disclosures that tell the unique story of a company to really make sure that investors are informed. So as a result of that design, some of the disclosure requirements in the standards are intentionally not very prescriptive. And some words, again by design, are not intended to have very specific meanings or definitions that would be required to be applied in all circumstances. And that means that we can't always provide really prescriptive answers to questions, even though people sometimes would like that. And What we thought was that the ISSB can't answer some of these questions very specifically, but it could be useful to bring a question like this to the TIG for a discussion, really to highlight two things. Firstly, how the standard and the related materials should be used, including how to use the materials to support the judgments that companies need to make when they prepare the disclosures, and how to use the standards and the related materials to approach a really specific question. So we pulled the package of information together to really try to achieve those two things.
Yeah, that's great, Sue, because a lot of financial reporting professionals, they already understand how to use and apply our standards because they're designed in a consistent manner with the IASB standards. However, while we use many of the same concepts and language as the IASB, we recognize that the ISSB standards are new for everyone. Isn't that right, Veronica?
Absolutely. And we have a whole new set of stakeholders. Some of them come from traditional financial reporting, but many are not familiar or may not be familiar with accounting standards in general or the IASB standards in particular. And of course, the ISSB standards are new. And companies will also be at different level of preparedness. Their state of readiness will depend on whether they are already using tools such as the TCFD recommendations or the SASB standards. To help companies that they are less familiar with the SASB standards and the concepts within them, several TIG members suggested that this agenda paper could be used as the basis for educational material on how to use the standards. So it's great for us to be talking about it today on this podcast. And let's use the opportunity to explain a bit of what we actually have covered.
Yeah, indeed. And that's a great segue to talk about the specifics of Agenda Paper 1. So this paper explained the different components of the standard and the materials published alongside the standard and how these can be used together to really help companies apply specific requirements. Veronica, what feedback did members have on this?
Members commented that it was helpful for an introduction to how to use the standards and that this paper could be a basis for educational material. IFRS S2 and the application guidance, definitions, and transition provisions in the appendices have to be applied. Accompanying guidance and the basis for conclusion do not set our requirements, but they're useful tools and context when using the standards. And the way we are using industry-based guidance is as accompanying guidance, which means it should be referred to and considered essentially as useful examples of good disclosure. But the particular disclosures do not have to be provided by a company. And even when only reporting on climate, IFRS S1 must also be applied. This sets out general requirements and contains information about judgment, measurement, uncertainty, and errors. Members also emphasize that IFRS S1 and IFRS S2 must be applied together. They have important links, and when applied together, requirements in IFRS S1, such as judgment and materiality, will be necessary to apply IFRS S2. The requirement to refer to and consider industry-based guidance can provide useful examples for companies applying IFRS S2. I thought it was also helpful that members shared some practical insights regarding their approach to reading and using the standards and related materials, including read it more than once and in full.
Lots of great feedback from our TIG members. Thanks, Veronica. Sue, turning to you now. Agenda Paper 1 then addresses the specific question on paragraph 29B through C of IFRS S2, which requires the disclosure of the amount and percentage of assets or business activities vulnerable to climate-related risks. The question submitted to the TIG relates to the specific terms business activities and vulnerable, and asks what these terms mean, given that IFRS S2 does not define them. Agenda Paper 1 then explains how to use and consider the terms vulnerable and business activities using the standards and the related materials when providing information about exposure to climate-related physical and transition risks. What did we hear from TIG members?
Well, we got lots of useful points of feedback, and we don't have time to cover everything in this episode, so I'd encourage you to look at the meeting summary on the meeting page, which is more complete. But a few things I think are worth sharing. The first is the importance of reading the specific disclosure requirements in the context of the disclosure objectives that are set out in IFRS S2. So, for example, when you apply the specific disclosure requirements in paragraph 29, the overall and specific disclosure objectives in IFRS 2 should be used because they really provide a good anchor to apply judgment in determining what's required to be disclosed that would provide useful information. Also, we were reminded that companies should remember that this isn't a box ticking or compliance exercise, and it isn't about getting away with providing the minimum disclosures you can. And that report preparers need to think about how the information disclosed aligns with the overall objective of the disclosures that are required. The second point I'd emphasise is this whole concept of materiality that's in our standards and also in the Accounting Standards Board's standards, which means that ultimately a company needs to make sure that the material information that an investor needs to understand about particular things about a company's climate-related risks and opportunities is provided. So, for example, when you look at the granularity of what a business activity is or just how vulnerable an asset needs to be in its vulnerability to have a disclosure, it's useful to remember that ultimately the information provided has to be material. Said differently, the information that's required to be disclosed is that which is reasonably expected to actually influence an investment decision. So it doesn't have to be, and in fact, it shouldn't be the minutia about every single exposure, but it should be at a level that the important information is made available. The third point is on connected information and keeping in mind that what you disclose elsewhere, whether for financial reporting or for sustainability reporting, could inform the disclosures provided by paragraph 29 of IFRS S2. So, for example, if you had to think really hard about whether an asset should be impaired when you were preparing the financial statements because of climate-related risks, that could be a pretty good indicator that information about that asset could be relevant when complying with paragraph 29B and C because vulnerability of the asset to climate mattered for the financial statements.
That's excellent, Sue. It sounds like this TIG discussion has some useful tips on how to approach other questions stakeholders might have on the standards. For example, I think that the thinking here can really be used by stakeholders for when other terms in the standards are not defined. Let's turn now to Agenda Paper 2, which addresses the submission on whether the requirement in IFRS S1 to revise preceding period estimated amounts applies only to estimated amounts disclosed for metrics or to all estimated amounts disclosed, including those disclosed for metrics. Veronica, what were your thoughts on the discussion?
Well, as first, I thought that the paper the staff prepared on this was really, really useful. The paper set out the staff's view that IFRS S1 requires the revision in the relevant circumstances of estimated amount disclosed in the preceding period when those amounts are metrics, rather than requiring a revision of all estimated amounts. Members discussed the analysis in Agenda Paper 2 and aligned with the staff view that the requirement to revise preceding period estimated amounts in the relevant circumstances applies only to metrics. So do you have any particular comments to share from this discussion?
Other than that, it was a geek's delight, so I very much enjoyed it. And of course, I always have things I want to share. So I would say that it's important to remember that revision is only required when the information is material and if the revision isn't impracticable. And so those are really important caveats to the circumstances when this requirement actually applies. Also, you'll need to apply judgment to assess when an estimated amount is a metric and therefore in the scope. And I think an important thing here is that the term metric isn't defined in our standards in IFRS S1 or IFRS S2. But there is a sort of relevant piece of information, and it was noted in the paper that paragraphs 22 to 26 of IFRS S1 and paragraph 28 of the climate standard IFRS S2 set out requirements for disclosing metrics. And please do take a look at that, because that shows that this notion of a metric covers quite a range of disclosures, including industry-specific information. So I don't think people should think of metrics in a narrow sense of that word. And maybe one more, if you would indulge me, which was that there were some good observations about making sure that if you do decide that a revision is required, it's really important to make sure that the resulting package of information still makes sense. So you shouldn't just revise a metric in isolation without making sure that the overall picture that you're left with is understandable for those using the information. And I thought that was, you know, a really good practical reminder.
Definitely is. Thank you, Sue and Veronica. This is a really helpful summary of the March TIG meeting.
Thanks, Deonora. Hopefully people will find this interesting, and I think, you know, really good for people to send us their questions.
Yeah, thanks, Deonora. Thanks, Sue. And I'm also looking forward to our upcoming TIG meetings.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of the ISSB Implementation Insights podcast. All of our transition implementation group meetings are recorded and available to watch on our website, where you can also read the meeting papers. Look out for the March 2024 meeting summary and the next TIG meeting, which is planned for June 13th to the 14th, 2024. Just search Transition Implementation Group on i4s.org to find the TIG page where you can access all of this content. We look forward to the next discussion.